Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
All of your top stories all in one place. Every day we call it the 4 o'clock reset here on the Burns and Gambo show. We hit the reset button, start the show over, and give you our reactions to all the top stories today in sports, starting with this news coming down from the LA Dodgers. Lefty Clayton Kershaw will not be ready for opening day, according to his manager, Dave Roberts, who made that announcement today. He has been slowed by shoulder inflammation this spring, has yet to pitch in a Cactus League game. He's been throwing, but he has not been throwing in games. Opening day, March 28th against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
10 days away. Opening day is 10 days away. It's weird it's not going to be here, but 10 days. And they'll take on the Dodgers in L.A. The Diamondbacks' home opener will be against the Red Sox. That'll be their home opener. You know, my guess is that it's probably Buehler that replaces him. It could be, maybe Rich Hill, but I think it's, I would think that it's going to be Buehler. That's going to be the guy that replaces him, Walker Buehler. Now, no announcement yet from the Dodgers, no indications who they would go with. But I would think that it would be Buehler.
We're assuming that Zach Greinke is going to be the opening day starter for the Diamondbacks. I don't know why he wouldn't be, but I did read a note today in one of the papers that suggested that because Greinke pitched yesterday and Ray pitched on the same day in a split squad, that there's still like the option to choose one or the other depending on what direction. They haven't announced it yet. They haven't said who will.
I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't be Zach Greinke.
I don't know why it would be either.
But why would it not be Zach Greinke?
But remember last year, it was Patrick Corbin. Now,
I think Torrey felt bad because he didn't pitch him in the playoffs the year before.
That was also in part because I think Greinke was still a little hurt and was kind of working his way back. I have no idea why it wouldn't be Zach Greinke. I'm just telling you what I read, and what I read suggested that there might be some sort of decision still to make about who your opening day starter would be, Ray.
Well, especially
Greinke,
with you not going up against Kershaw. So you're not going to have a Greinke-Kershaw matchup in that first game.
Yeah.
Try to get Greinke as many wins as you can and have him pitch well so it's easy to trade him when the deadline comes around.
Suns host the Chicago Bulls tonight. No Tyler Johnson, no Rashawn Holmes, no TJ Warren, and no Kelly Oubre. All ruled out for tonight's game that tips off at 7 o'clock here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The Suns have won 6 of their last 10 games.
Yeah, and they're going to be shorthanded against the Bulls team, and some people may say, oh, to try to make sure that they hold on to, you know, one of the top 3 spots and not fall because they're 2 games below the Bulls.
Suns have 17 wins. The Bulls have 19 wins.
Yeah, so that, you know, you're trying to make sure the Bulls stay ahead of you in the standings because you don't want to have your chances drop by 2 percentage points for the top overall pick. I'm not really buying it. True belief is that the Suns are going out there to try to win basketball games. I think they've proven that over the last 2 weeks.
Big game for the Coyotes tonight. Sarah just mentioned it a second ago. They're on the road against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
That is a great team.
That is a great team. And the Coyotes' lead over the Minnesota Wild got trimmed a little bit yesterday. Minnesota lost to the Islanders, but they did it
in
overtime,
point.
So they got a point.
And
so
Colorado won yesterday. They got 2 points.
So the Coyotes' lead against Minnesota in the wild card race for that second spot is only 1 point right now as the Coyotes open up this big 4-game road trip starting today.
Yeah, and this is where they're going to have to do it. I mean, got 5 out of 6 on the road. And the toughest game is tonight against Tampa. This is a really, really good hockey team. So it'll be a tough matchup for them tonight.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Coyotes right now. I'm looking at the playoff standings. The Coyotes still have a 4-point lead over Colorado for the second spot. It's Minnesota. It's right on their heels down by a point.
And I know Chicago's even further down, but Chicago's not out of it. I mean, they're 5 points behind the Coyotes. Chicago's not out of this by any stretch. It'll be a tough final 10 games.
But our top story of the day, yesterday's NCAA March Madness announcements. Your top seeds, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia and Gonzaga. ASU checks in for the second straight year in a play-in game as an 11 seed going to Dayton. They will play St. John's. Last time they were in the tournament was 2015. For ASU, the first time that they've been in the quote-unquote NCAA tournament in back-to-back years since the Reagan administration.
Wow.
The early part of the Reagan administration under Ned Wolk. It has been a while since ASU has gone dancing 2 straight years. The question is, because it's that first 4 designation and that they have to win a game to get to what a lot of people believe is the actual tournament
on
Friday.
The winner of this game would play Buffalo.
Right.
31-3 Buffalo.
And isn't it interesting that the winner of this game, it also happens to be Bobby Hurley's old
former team
employer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually works out like that.
Yeah, and the coach, you know, Nate Oates is the coach of Buffalo. He was an assistant in 2013. Hurley brought him on board. And then Bobby left to become ASU's coach. And then Oates got promoted to be Buffalo's head coach less than a week later. So Bobby brought him there, and he's the head coach. He doesn't want to play him. He prefers not to play him. He's going to root for him, but he prefers not to play
him. "I owe him my career, really, for giving me my shot, but I don't want to play him." Close quote. That's what Nate Oates said to the local media after Buffalo was announced.
Yeah, I'd probably prefer not to. I mean, it'll be, you know, might be a difficult thing to do, go up against your former boss. It's not easy, but let's let things happen. It's... Sometimes you got to do that. You got to play. We've always thought that maybe they would put Bobby Hurley in a bracket with Duke. Instead, they put Bobby Hurley in a bracket with Buffalo. They always find a way to do something,
sure.
Right?
Well, did you see what they did with Minnesota and Louisville? Minnesota is coached by Patino's kid. So now Patino's son has to go up against the school that fired
his dad.
His dad, right? Yeah, I mean, so there's like a lot of little Shakespearean kind of revenge going on with that one.
I think I even read today somebody could call to get some tips on what to do, right?
I think I even read today where Rick Pitino said he was not going to attend the game. You know, he just wants the game to kind of stand on its own merit.
Oh, but yeah, there, don't take any.
There's some people who think that there's a little
away.
Conspiracy kind of going on, some built-in drama with that game right there, because now it's Pitino's kid coaching against Patino's old team. But back to the ASU matchup.
They should win. I mean, they should win. St. John's is not very good. They got a great player in Shamari Ponds. They've got a few good wins. They play in a better conference, the Big East. But ASU's got more talent. They got more size. If they could find a way to shut down Ponds, he'll be an NBA player. Then they should be able to win this game. And then a lot of people like them against Buffalo. Look, I'm just glad they got in, because I was very worried as I'm watching the brackets, and they go through the first bracket and the second and the third, and you're like, oh my God, are they going to get jobbed here? Like, are they going to get jobbed? And I was like tweeting some stuff out. There were a lot of people that were worried. Like, I'm genuinely concerned right now that we're through three brackets and they're not even, you know, they're not in yet. So, but you knew you still had one more playing game left, and they were going to name two teams, and you just weren't sure if they were going to get in. You knew two more teams were left, and they were going to play in teams. It ended up being Arizona State and St. John's. They got in.
Yeah, Bobby Hurley was asked this morning on Doug and Wolf if he was getting nervous.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were certain teams on the 10 line and the 11 line that I thought that, you know, we might have, you know, outperformed them, you mm-hmm. know, top to bottom, just with our season, and it just didn't go our way with some of those selections. And then when I saw immediately that we weren't in one half of the play-in game, and as they go three brackets done, and you're in your last chance, right. It gets a little dicey.
The question now is Remy Martin. Now, Bobby Hurley has said, and he said it this morning on Doug and Wolf's show, look, he's telling me he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be fine. He tweaked his groin against Oregon on Friday night, had to leave the game. He was asked this morning on Doug and Wolf's show if he's thought about sitting Remy Martin. Here's what he said.
The thought crossed my mind that if we were in Dayton that I might, you know, just sit Remy and hope that we could get through the game and then have him ready for later in the week. But, you know, when your season's on the line, your thoughts could change very quickly, and that will be the case on Wednesday night. And it's also just my conversations with Remy. I trust him when we talk, and he's telling me that he's getting so much better every day. So, I have a good feeling that he'll be close to 100% by Wednesday night.
There's no way that kid's a gamer. There's no way he doesn't play.
I agree.
That kid's not going to miss his opportunity.
To be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised Hurley even acknowledged he was thinking about it even for a moment about not playing. You've got to, if Remy Martin's 75%, you have to play him in that game.
He's gonna be like, I'm fine, I'm playing. Now, during the course of the game, maybe he's, you know, slowed down a little bit by the injury, but I mean, this is his chance. I mean, he wants to play in the NCAA tournament again. He's got an opportunity, and I think that kid's tough as nails. I'd be surprised if he didn't play, and they're going to need him. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, he's the leader of that team. You know, he's the leader.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, out of all the players there, I mean, there's some good players. There's some good talent. Dort probably has the best overall talent and the chance to play in the NBA, but Remy Martin's the leader of the basketball team.
Last time ASU won a tournament game, 2009, James Harden, Jeff Ayers, Derek Glasser. Temple.
Jeff Ayers.
That was the last time, 2009. So it's been 10 years since they've won a tournament game.
St. John's hasn't won a tournament game since they beat the Lumber Jokes.
And that was been, what, 02?
2000, I think.
2000 is when that was.
It's been a long time.
And NAU gave them, will never forget that, man. They gave them a game.
Like I said, I mean, Remy, a chance to play in the NCAA tournament for this kid, I don't see this any way that he's going to miss up his first opportunity here.
Tonight is an important game for Suns draft positioning. And perhaps in a related story, they're a little shorthanded in the process, or maybe not at all. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Their second maybe off the clock. Got a foul. Why haven't they fouled? Jackson for the tie. Why didn't they foul? 1.1 to play. Am I missing something here?
All part of the craziness that was Saturday night's win against the New Orleans Pelicans. Kevin Calabro with the call on Fox Sports New Orleans. Their side of the call. The Josh Jackson three-pointer.
What the hell are they doing?
They're doing that fouling. On the Suns broadcast, it sounded something like this.
So Jackson will inbound to get the ball to Booker. Booker throws it out to Josh Jackson. His three, Shazam! Josh Jackson.
That's why you always foul, ladies and gentlemen.
That ties the game.
They don't have a timeout. That's got to be a technical this time.
And then Alvin Gentry tried to call a timeout, had none to take. Technical free throw awarded to Devin Booker.
With 1.1 second left in the game.
Stood at the line for what felt like forever, waiting for things to calm down so he could shoot the free throw. And having already missed five free throws in the game, calmly hit it, man. Gave the Suns the win.
I love Alvin, but he went all Chris Webber right there, didn't he?
A little bit. And afterwards, he said it was totally his fault.
Oh, I called it. That was my mistake. That was on me. You know, I called the timeout. We didn't have a timeout. That's where the technical came from. So, I thought we had one left. They said we had one left. We didn't have one left, so that's all on me. I'll take the hit for that.
I don't know how they won that game, but they did, and they've now won six of their last 10 going into tonight's game against the Chicago Bulls.
You can't lose a game up seven with the ball with 15 seconds left. I mean, you just can't. You can't lose that game. If you're anybody, you can't lose that game. But Frank Jackson missed the free throw. Julius Randle missed the free throw. They couldn't get an inbounds pass. They got a five-second violation because they couldn't get the ball inbounds. And then they actually had two fouls to give. They gave one on the pass to Booker, and then when he inbounded the ball again, they didn't give the second one to Josh Jackson. He hits a three to force, you know, looked like it was going to force overtime. But instead, they call a timeout. You get the technical free throw with 1 second left in a game, and the Suns win it. I mean, it's an improbable win. One that a lot of people were talking about in New Orleans that could cost Alvin Gentry his job, because it's just, you're not supposed to, you know, that's your job. You're the coach.
Yeah.
You're supposed to know you have a timeout. And Alvin's a great coach. And he had a brain lock there, and it cost his team a basketball game. Doesn't mean he's still not a great coach. It just means that, you know, in a year right now where New Orleans is going to go through a lot of transition, and they're going to have a new general manager, and they're going to trade Anthony Davis. Do you want to come back with Alvin Gentry or not?
So tonight the Suns are back home taking on a Chicago Bulls team, and in the world of, and we've been saying this for years now, but in the world of the upside down, it's a big game. Though the upside down, the world has changed a little bit. Having the worst record, the very worst record in the league, doesn't mean what it meant a year ago. It's the same.
The top three, the worst three teams all have the exact same odds. And the team that's fourth, their odds don't change by that much. The team by fifth, a little bit. So, I mean, the top five teams all have a relatively decent chance of getting the pick. I mean, the odds aren't crazy different. But if you're in the bottom three, you're like, there's nobody has better odds than you. But what changes the most is your chance to fall. Like, if you're one, you can only fall to like four. But if you're two, I think then you could fall to five. And so the further you the more wins you get, the better chance there is that you can fall. Because then if you're the third worst team, you could fall to, I think it's seven. You could fall to seven.
I have it right here in front.
All right, give
so,
it to me,
so,
yeah.
So the Chicago Bulls have the fourth worst record in the NBA right now. They have 19 wins. They're in town playing the Suns tonight. There's a chance they could fall to the eighth pick in the NBA draft.
And they have the fourth worst record.
Fourth can go to eighth.
But the first team can't go to eighth, and the second team can't go to eighth, and the third team can't go to eighth.
The first team can go to fifth. the second team can go to sixth, the third team can go to seventh. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
So that's what you worry about more than what exactly your odds are. How far can I fall?
Right.
I don't want to fall to... Like, so if you're the worst team, you're guaranteed a top five pick. But if you're the fourth worst team, you could have the eighth pick.
Right.
So that's the biggest difference there, is not so much the odds as much as how far you can fall.
Yeah, so to look at it through that prism, all right, so here are the Suns with the 17 wins on the season. They're tied. They basically have the second worst record in the league right now. New York has the worst, 14-56, followed by the Suns, 17-54, then Cleveland, 17-53, so the Suns' percentage points ahead of them, and then tonight's opponent, Chicago, at 19-52. For all the reasons that you just talked about, am I allowed, you tell me, am I allowed to say something looks suspicious without believing that it is actually suspicious? Kelly Oubre not playing tonight looks suspicious, but I don't think it is. I think he just is hurt. But given what potentially could be on the line tonight in these upside down standings,
okay,
I have to be a grown up and acknowledge it kind of looks suspicious that he's not playing in tonight's game, but I don't think the Suns are playing
these,
that game anymore.
If they were losing all these games and not winning any games, people would buy that. I don't buy it for the simple fact that they're winning a lot of games. They beat Miami, they beat the Lakers, they beat
Milwaukee,
they beat
Golden
Milwaukee,
State,
Golden
New
State,
Orleans.
The Knicks. Like, they're winning a bunch of basketball games now. They're not trying to lose these games. They're trying to win these games. So from that perspective, I mean, I understand what you're saying. And in previous years, I think people would have jumped all over that. Kelly Oubre's not playing because they're trying to lose the basketball game. If they were battling for a playoff spot tonight, there's a good chance that that these guys would play. Okay? But when you've got guys that are hurt, and your team's not going anywhere, it's just business sense. You might make a gigantic investment in Kelly Oubre. Don't take the chance if he's a little banged up. You know, you might invest $80 million in a guy. Who knows how much?
Right.
But you're going to make a major investment in him. You know, you want to take care of your players. You want to take care, and you also want to show him, hey, listen, this is the type of organization we are. We're going to take care of you. We're going to make sure you get, we don't need you to go out there and risk getting hurt because we care about you.
Right.
We want to make sure that you're better. We want to make sure you get healed. We want to get you, you want our team to work on you. We got a good medical team. So that, I mean, that's, Kelly Oubre would probably play tonight if this was a battle for a playoff spot.
Yeah. And that's why I want to make sure I'm clear about this. I think to somebody on the outside looking in, it would look a little suspicious that Kelly Oubre is not playing. But for those of us on the inside kind of looking out, following this team every game the way we do, there's no way you could make the argument that this team has been doing anything to try to lose these games over the last few weeks. I mean, it just does not jibe with what we're seeing out there on the floor. So I even though it might look suspicious, I really don't think it is. I think the Suns, and look, I heard Vinny talking about this earlier, and I believe in this. I even though I was a big supporter of trying to lose games the last couple of years, trying to get the number one pick, I'm not this year for two reasons. Number one, because of the way the odds have changed, okay?
Okay.
And number two, because I do believe, as crazy as this is going to sound, that there is something to, like, the basketball gods, and that by trying to lose, you might anger the basketball gods. Karma might work against you a little bit. If you go out there and willfully, deliberately try to lose basketball games, try not
Karma to... Karma didn't burn him last year when they tried to lose
games. No, it didn't.
And they got the number one pick.
Well, I mean, yeah, unless Luka Doncic ends up being the better player than DeAndre Ayton, and then perhaps Karma did get them, but it did, you know, with Eric Bledsoe shutting him down the way they did, right?
Right.
Taking a perfectly healthy player and sitting him. That was a team that had the second worst odds in the NBA and ended up with the fourth pick in the draft. Karma bit him right in the butt that year, if you believe in such things. And I kind of do, to be honest with you. I sometimes do believe in karma.
I'll be at the game tonight, so I'll try. You know, I'll find out a little bit more in detail. My gut feeling is that these guys are just a little banged up, and with, you know, the season winding down, and the importance of the game is nothing. And here's the other thing too: like, if you were playing a team that was battling for a playoff spot, I think you owe it, for integrity reasons, to play your players because, you know, you're trying to just play the game. But you play in Chicago, they're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. Neither team's going anywhere. So you don't have to play a guy for integrity. Like if you were playing a team that was battling for the eighth spot, you need the integrity of the game. You should play your guys to try to win.
Tomorrow's Ticket Window Tuesday presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to go see comedian Aziz Ansari March 26th at Comerica Theater. We'll also throw in a pair of Peoria Sports Complex spring training tickets as well. So listen tomorrow, 7:15 a.m., 10:15 a.m., and then at 12:15 and 4:15 in the afternoon for your chance to win. As a group, they've been the joke of college basketball all season, but they got three teams in. Can the Pac-12 Conference redeem itself in March Madness is something we'll talk about coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
I know that I must do what's right. Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus of the Serengeti.
We're not actually not talking about Mount Kilimanjaro until later, but it's Sarah's favorite song, so.
Here we go.
It's a good song. It really is.
It is. Sing it, Gambo. Let's go.
It's gonna take a lot to drag me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do.
Really good, you guys.
You and Sarah were actually, dare I say it, harmonizing.
We were good.
Yeah.
The intern and I were reaching for our lighters in here to put them up in the sky.
Yeah.
I will say this, you guys don't remember, you may not know this. Toto had another big hit. Does anybody remember what it was?
Rosanna.
And another one that I remember too.
Hold the Line.
Hold the Line.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Hold the Line.
But, but nothing like this. Nothing like the magic of Africa.
Hold the Line was a great song.
Yeah, nothing like this.
Great song.
Toto.
This song is just
magic.
They
still play. Let's go see them in concert.
I don't think we have to. Let's since this is now Sarah's theme song, let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the
day.
Wait,
that play still play. Hold the Line right there. They're playing in London on June 13th, if you want to go.
Let's go.
We're going.
Toto's in London.
Or we could just play the Twitter poll update theme music.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update. Presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah, what's that for? Hold the line, Sarah. Hold the line.
Today's Twitter poll question, what is the best all-time Africa or Toto song. It's Africa.
Yeah,
there it is.
90% say Africa.
They're in Ireland, in Cork. I've been to Cork, Ireland, June 15th. They're in Cork.
9% say Rosanna, and 1% says Hold the Line.
They're playing in Norway in June.
We're not
Denmark.
We're not going.
Hungary, Austria, Germany.
Let me know when they're playing in Phoenix.
Rome, July 4th. Rome, let's do it.
I'd rather be in America on July 4th, but that's okay.
All right.
Oh, man.
Well, Gambo, I'll get back to planning a trip.
Switzerland.
Momentarily.
I love Switzerland.
Hey,
Finland. They're playing in Finland July 20th.
Would you stop already? We're not going to Europe to go see Africa.
Let's go see Toto.
Sarah, what is the update on the Twitter poll question, please?
All right. We're talking Pac-12 basketball for a hot second. Which team from the Pac-12 conference goes furthest in the NCAA tournament? Right now, 36% of our voters say ASU, but just behind them, 35% say it will be Oregon. 20% voted for all three Pac-12 teams lose their first game, and then only 9% say Washington will go the furthest.
That would be a disaster for the Pac-12. Someone's got to win a game. If it's a repeat of last year where everybody was out before we even got to the weekend, I don't know. Look, I don't know what else could happen that would be more disastrous for the Pac-12 than what has already happened, because it's been a disastrous last couple of years in football.
You don't
want to
be embarrassed
basketball.
Any further. You've already been you're humiliated. The conference has been humiliated. Football and basketball-wise, I mean, you look at all these other conferences and the amount of teams that they're getting in, and then you look at the Pac-12, you're like, geez, three teams in? Seriously? I mean, you're not getting teams into the playoffs in the Final Four in college football. Nobody in basketball is making any runs. I mean, U of A got knocked out by Buffalo last year. Look, the Pac-12, no matter what happens in this tournament, the Pac-12 needs an overhaul. They need an overhaul.
Yep.
They got to fix this conference in the worst way. They got to figure something out because they're pathetic. They're pathetic. They're putting guys in the pros, but they're not having any team success. I mean, look at the seeds. A 9, a 12, and a play-in game.
Right.
This is the Pac-12?
That's the Pac-12.
I mean,
this is
remember
us.
When UCLA went to three Final Fours in a row?
Sure.
Remember when U of A was a consistent Sweet 16? Remember when U of A got to two Final Eights, Elite Eights in a row?
Yep.
I mean, and now you're, I mean, look at the conference. I mean, it's really struggling. So no matter what happens, if they go 3-0, you know, maybe for the conference, to be all honest, maybe they need to go 3-0 here as more another wake-up call, another slap to the face that there is something really, really wrong with this conference and it needs to be fixed.
No, all we would do is get Larry Scott hanging out in his 3,700-square-foot suite in Vegas telling us how everything's okay because the Pac-12 does awesome in water polo. The Pac-12, right? How the Pac-12 does awesome.
Track and field.
Which is fine if you compete in those sports, but you are judged by football and men's basketball. And that's just the world. The moneymakers.
That's the moneymakers.
That's the world we live in. Now, that being said, Oregon, I've seen, is kind of a trendy pick as a 12 upsetting a 5. Okay, that's sort of...
They're playing good, right? Playing on a roll. They beat ASU in overtime, and then they smacked Washington around and beat them up pretty good in winning the Pac-12 championship to get them into. They ended on a strong note, too. They won a bunch of their games down the stretch.
And ASU's getting a little love for not only their ability to get past St. John's in the playoff game on Wednesday, but then to beat Buffalo a 6 on Friday. Here's Seth Greenberg on Bickley and Murata earlier today.
I actually like Arizona State to win their playing game, and I like Arizona State to beat Buffalo.
Basketball Power Index on ESPN gave Arizona State
26%?
A 26% chance of beating Buffalo.
Said
it's actually one of the more predictable upsets out there if you look at kind of the odds of these things happening.
You're taking a team from a power conference and you're playing Buffalo, you know, from a mid-major conference. And even though Buffalo's good, it's still a lot of times people like those upsets. When you take a team that's had a lot of success playing not a lot of great teams, and you take a team from a power conference. But I just don't think of the Pac-12 as a power conference anymore. I just don't think of them as a power conference.
I don't know how you could.
They need U of A to get back on top badly. Badly. UCLA, too. They need to be top-heavy. The conference needs to be top-heavy. This year, they weren't. The best team was Washington?
Yeah.
Really? That was the best team, and they lost by 20 in the Pac-12 final.
It's not even much of an argument to say that the West Coast Conference with Gonzaga and St. Mary's is a better basketball conference than the Pac-12 is right now.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 might be deeper.
You might
not play the same patsies that you might in that comp, but the top of that conference is way better than the Pac-12 at this point.
Way better. Gonzaga doesn't have football, do they?
No, I don't think so. No, they don't. And I understand.
To invite them to the Pac-12.
The eighth best, the eighth best team in the West Coast Conference is not nearly as good as the eighth best team in the Pac-12. Of course, I understand that. But if you're looking at the top of these conferences, now ASU, here's something to consider. And I remember reading this stat 100 times last year before that Syracuse game. So I'm going to read it again because you know what? Syracuse went and did it. Syracuse last year went and sort of once again showed that just because you're a first four team doesn't mean you're doomed to win your first four game and then lose the next time out. 8 straight years, a team from the first four has won at least one more game in the tournament. 7 of those 8 years, it has been the winner of the Wednesday night game, same one that ASU played a year ago.
You talked me into it.
Same one that ASU is playing in this year.
You're saying take Arizona State to win two.
Yes.
Take Arizona State to win two.
I'm saying that history says if you think ASU is good enough to beat the play-in game against St. John's, that history says that team wins at least one more, especially if they play on Wednesday night.
I'm a St. John's fan. They're not very good.
They're not.
No, they're not. I watched them lose by 30 to Duke. I mean, they're not that good.
I mean, ASU might be maddeningly inconsistent.
They've
got to be better than St. John's.
I would think
so. They've got to be.
St. John's has a really, really good player. He's going to play in the NBA in Jamari Pons. But they don't have any size. No size at all. I mean, they're not a good team.
Yeah. Twice in the last 5 years, a first four team has gone on to the Sweet 16. It can happen. And every single year, a team from the first four has gone on at least to the round of 32. Happens every year.
What's the other play-in game?
Belmont,
that's
Temple.
Right.
Temple, thank you. Belmont and Temple. That's the Tuesday night play-in game. So that's the other one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and then Belmont, if they win, would play Maryland. And
yes.
Some people like that as an upset, too.
Yes, they do. He's a journeyman quarterback that is
I got the tickets right here up for Toto in Switzerland if you want to go. $74.80 in euros.
Something tells me it's going to cost.
July 16th, Switzerland, Toto, Summer Nights Open Air Tour.
I hate to break it to you. You're going to be swimming with the pigs in the Bahamas on July 16th.
Oh, okay.
I know your calendar better than you do. He's a journeyman quarterback that is now with his seventh team.
Finland, July 20th?
Could Ryan Fitzpatrick's signing in Miami affect the Cardinals' own plans? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
There's nothing that 100 men or more can ever do.
I'm not going to call it breaking news out of the NFL, but it is interesting news out of the NFL that is currently breaking as we speak. Blake Bortles is finalizing a contract to join the Rams as Jared Goff's backup.
It's got to come to the realization that's all you are right now. You're a backup goalie. You're a backup goalie. I just watched the Coyotes score a goal. 1-0 Yotes, I think Panic scored.
You're a backup goalie? I thought he was a quarter. I know Bortles is a bad quarterback.
Mistake by Tampa in their own zone leads to a goal by Panic. They're up 1-0 on Tampa Bay.
Very nice. That's a tough team that got a 1-0.
He will not be a backup goalie. He will be a backup quarterback.
Yes. Of course. I mean, but of all the places to be a backup in.
That was Keller. Keller scored.
That's not a bad place to be.
No. Right? No. I mean, listen, you don't have a chance. See, you don't have a chance to be the starter there. So, if you agree, I'm going to be a backup for the rest of my career, then it's okay to be there. But if you still have aspirations of starting, there's got to be other places that you can go. There's got to be 10 teams in the league where you could go be a backup, and their start is not very good, and you would have a chance to compete. You know, for a job.
Yeah, those teams might not have wanted him. You know, those teams might have said, we're in a situation where we know our backup is probably going to end up playing this year, and we don't want it to be you because we don't think you're very good. I don't know. I mean, it's...
We'll go to one of those places with an older quarterback, in New Orleans or New England or Pittsburgh.
But again,
the quarterbacks, you know...
Those places might not have wanted him. I don't know. I don't know what the marketplace was for Blake Bortles. I just think it's interesting that it's a division rival. It's a Super Bowl caliber team. And if something happens...
Yeah, they can maintain it. That's what you want to do.
If something happens to Jared Goff, you're going to need Blake Bortles to come in and be good for a week or two or four if something were to happen. And it's interesting that the Rams chose him to be that in case of emergency break glass guy that they can turn to if something happens to Goff, because that's a team with Super Bowl aspirations.
I think that it's a great move for the Rams as far as because you've got a great running game. You hope that Gurley comes back and you have a good running game. You've got a great defense. You've got good wide receivers. So, you know, Bortles might, you know, you could probably manage games and win with Bortles. I mean, it makes sense from that aspect if I'm the Rams. I get a guy that is a capable guy. He was in the AFC Championship 14 months ago. Guy took his team to an AFC Championship. He's got a lot of starts under his belt. He's better than the A.J. McCarron type of backup, you know, Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez. You know, Bortles, he's not, you know, a lot of people don't like him. He's not, but he's had some success and he's had a lot of games under his belt.
He has. Speaking of backup quarterbacks, or is it starting quarterbacks? We're not quite sure. The Miami Dolphins over the weekend, a team that we're really keeping our eye on here in Arizona. One, because we're trying to figure out if they're going to trade up to number one, if they want to trade up to number one, or two, are they a team that's in play for Josh Rosen if the Cardinals decide to trade Josh Rosen? The Miami Dolphins went as expected. We knew they had to add somebody, right? They had to add somebody at the position. The word out of Miami that you're reading is that Miami fans are upset because the guy they got might be too good for them to lose the number of games they would need to have the number one pick next year, when Tua Viola is going to be presumably the number one guy in the draft. They got Ryan Fitzpatrick on a two-year deal.
Yeah, it says how Fitzpatrick signing could cost the Dolphins a shot at the top pick in the 2020 draft. Now, there's three good quarterbacks right now projected to be, you know, in this draft. From Georgia, Tua Viola from Alabama, and Herbert from Oregon. Three projected to be, like, top picks. But the Dolphins are, like the lead story in the Miami Herald is the Dolphins aren't going to botch this already, are they? Can they possibly bungle the easiest step of the tanking rebuilding process, being bad enough to secure the best quarterback in the 2020 draft? And their point is that if you win four games, you don't get the top pick. Over the past 30 years, you know, teams that win, you know, four games don't get the top pick. So if they just go 4-12, they're not going to have the top pick.
Yeah.
Says this decade, only one team that went 3-13 landed the number one pick, which Tennessee traded to the Rams. Says, keep in mind, in his last three seasons as a full-time starter, Fitzpatrick's teams won 6-10 games. So their point is that Fitzpatrick wins games. I mean, he's not going to make you 10, 11, 12-win team, most likely, but could he win you 5 or 6 and keep you out of the top pick? Probably.
It's interesting when Ian Rappaport from the official league-owned network, the NFL Network, when he even admits that Miami wouldn't mind having the worst record this year.
It certainly seems like 2019 is going to be an evaluation year, a rebuilding year, and one where, let's just say, if they ended up in a position to draft someone really highly in the 2020 draft, that would not be something they're against.
I mean, okay, in a league that likes to pride itself on we don't tank, we don't tank, we don't tank, that sounds like
tanking.
That sounds like one of the top NFL insiders in the world saying that team wouldn't mind tanking at all.
Could you have not signed a worse quarterback?
Mike
Glennon,
Blake Bortles, AJ McCarron,
RG3.
Sure.
I mean, could you have not signed a guy? Like, if you looked at all the quarterbacks that were available, Fitzpatrick's probably better than those guys. You even said it. The guy's made like $60-something million in his career, right?
$58 million in his career before this two-year $11 million deal.
Okay, so the guy's going to make over $60 million in his career. I mean, you could have signed a worse quarterback.
Could have.
You could have said, we're going to sign Mike Glennon. Why? Because we're trying to go 2-14 this year. We're trying to go 2-14. I'm just saying, the Miami Herald's point is that signing Fitzpatrick, and if he plays all 16 games, he's probably just good enough to not have you be the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, I wonder if they decided they needed to sign a guy who it wasn't as blatant or obvious to the rest of the world that they were trying to lose games, and that Fitzpatrick might be that guy, but it might end up ruining them in terms of getting the top pick.
I still don't think he's very good. They're going to get one of those three quarterbacks. They're going to get one of the three. Now, unless they do something this year, trade for Rosen or draft a quarterback this year, they could still do that. We don't know. Everybody's looking at them next year. Could they still pull off a trade for a quarterback like a Josh Rosen? Could they draft a quarterback where they're picking? It's possible. But if they are focused on next year's draft class,
they'll get
one of those three guys because they're going to be bad.
I have a couple thoughts on that. Okay, number one, it seems to me now that if we're so openly admitting that that's what Miami is doing, that I almost feel like I have to rule them out as a team that could trade up to number one or trade for Josh Rosen. Because when you've got Ian Rappaport saying they wouldn't mind losing a bunch of games, that doesn't sound like a team planning on doing anything big this year to address the quarterback position, does it?
Unlikely that they would.
Okay.
They're probably focused on next year's draft because everybody thinks next year's draft is loaded with three great quarterbacks.
So I'm not drawing a black Sharpie line through the Dolphins yet as a destination for Rosen or the number one pick, but I'm doing it in pencil. I mean, I'm drawing a line. I don't think that either one of those guys are going to go there because it doesn't seem like the Dolphins are interested. Number two, yeah, they'll get one of the top three guys, but I think you only do this if you are really trying to get the top pick in the draft so you can have your choice of Tagovailoa, Herbert, or Fromm. You know, I don't know if making your fan base endure a brazenly open tanking season like the Dolphins are about to do it, I think you have to do it to get the number one pick, not to get one of the three quarterbacks. Don't you think?
But that didn't happen last year. Buffalo moved up twice. I want to get one of them.
But if you're sitting,
the Jets put themselves in a position to just get one of them. So, like, you know, Cleveland wasn't trading the pick. So you didn't know who Cleveland was going to take.
Yeah.
Two teams last year tried to just put themselves in a position to make sure they got one of the guys.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, by the way, the Lightning just tied it up 1-1 with about 11 minutes to go in the first period.
About 10 seconds to tie the score.
It didn't take long at all. For the second consecutive year, ASU basketball will be a part of the play-in game. What is the appropriate reaction? Celebration or a shrug of the shoulders? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.